This is Bristol Bay and Beyond, KDLG's weekly news magazine. It's Friday, May 20th. I'm your host, Dave Benninger. Thanks for joining us. This week, we're going to take a look at tourism in our region.
Once people start coming in here, they continue to come back. I'd say 85% of my business is return people year after year after year.
We'll talk with a few people in the biz to find out what's the draw, if there's room to expand, and the outlook for the coming season.
I get more corporate travel than I have in the past, and my phone is still ringing very steadily, so it's very encouraging. My best estimate's going to be up probably 10 to 15% from last year.
Plus, one big aspect of area tourism is underway right now. We found a hunter thrilled to bring an Alaska Peninsula brown bear back to his wife in Kansas.
She'll love this because it's beautiful. The legs are all from like the elbow down to its foot. It's dark brown, and then it's just varying shades of brown, light brown, blonde, and tan. Big, wide head. It's a beautiful, beautiful specimen.
Those stories and more are coming up after a look back at some of the week's news. The 2016 commercial salmon season got underway Monday with a 12-hour opener for gillnetters in the Copper River District. Stormy Haught is a fisheries biologist in the Cordova office and was tallying harvest reports Tuesday morning, even as the prized catch was making a media splash as it landed in Seattle.
You know, it looks like it's going to be initial harvest for the first period of the season, somewhere around 30,000 sockeye, which is right in the middle of our anticipated harvest for the date. So looks to be on track here.
Fishermen were collecting $6.50 a pound for reds and $9.50 a pound for kings from Monday's opener. In Seattle, the salmon was delivered down a red carpet on the tarmac to eager chefs. Haught says Fish and Game is tracking a little bit smaller fish size from the initial harvest, which was not unexpected. Governor Bill Walker called the legislature into a special session that begins Monday to finish the work lawmakers failed to complete during the 121-day session that ended Wednesday. One change compared to the regular session, Walker says he's going to be more involved.
I'm very respectful of the separation of powers, but I think that these are pieces of legislation with my name on it. They're in a special session that I have called, and I will be very engaged on a daily basis.
Walker still wants the legislature to pass a plan that will balance the budget by the fiscal year that starts in July 2018. Lawmakers gavel back in Monday at 11 a.m. in Juneau. Governor Walker made two surprise Skype phone calls this week to students in Alaska, telling them that their essays had been picked as winners and they would be naming new ferry vessels in the state. One of those students was Tenalian 7th grader Malia Varan, who shared the first paragraph of her essay, Why.
The Taslina would be a great name for one of Alaska's new ferries. Imagine stepping out of your car amidst many other parked vehicles. Your heart rapidly beats with excitement. You are on a dock looking at a beautiful ferry in which you will be riding from Skagway all the way to Juneau. Your anxiety and excitement overwhelms you as you breathlessly whisper, "The Taslina. I will be riding on the Taslina."
The other winner was Taylor Thompson from Eagle River, who suggested Hubbard. All ferries in Alaska are named after glaciers in the state. A partnership between stakeholders announced it will fund and operate the Igooshik Counting Tower this year. Fish and Game Area Manager Tim Sands.
I think this was led by BBNA to develop this agreement and get it so that Igooshik Tower will run. And BBSRI is going to manage that tower, but really it's the Village of Manicotic, Trident, and Peter Pan. They're the ones putting up the cash money.
The Igooshik and Togiak counting towers had been cut from the department's management plan amidst larger state budget cuts, but both will now operate this year thanks to private funding. Last weekend in Anchorage, Alaska Democrats gathered to pick delegates and tend to party business ahead of their national convention in July. It was a record turnout and a little raucous. District 37 party chair Mike Davis offered reaction afterwards.
Dynamic, different and interesting, lots of new energy and lots of new faces. I mean, with the fact that Bernie took 82% of the delegates meant there was lots of new blood and a lot of old faces weren't there. Well, except for me, maybe.
Senator Bernie Sanders from Vermont has 13 pledged delegates from Alaska, and Secretary Hillary Clinton has 3. Dillingham's Pete Andrew was selected as one of those delegates. Dillingham's Julie Baltar was elected the new secretary for the Alaska Democratic Party. The Cleveland and Pavlov volcanoes continue to be closely monitored as both have been restless over the past week and a half. And the Department of Fish and Game says they are closely monitoring a new walrus haulout between Ugashik and Igigik and will offer fishermen an update on how it could affect fishing on the June 1st announcement. More on this week's news can be found at our website, kdlg.org. You're listening to Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG. I'm Dave Benninger. Let's start this week's show with this vintage film clip about our little neck of the woods.
Only hours from where you now are lies Angler's Paradise, Adventureland in Alaska. Land of the midnight sun, home of the biggest and scrappiest fish on Earth. Modern jet air transportation makes it easy to get there, like traveling on a breeze.
That gem is a promotional film for Angler's Paradise Lodges, put together by Don Horder back in 1959. We stumbled on it a few weeks ago when we reported on the sale of Angler's Paradise Lodges, now called Katmai Land, to the Bristol Bay Native Corporation.
Mountains and sky. Here is Western Alaska at its best, in the upland Katmai country, where every lake is a jewel set in the ring of Alaskan peaks. Where waters clear as crystal flow only to bring the angler fish he has always dreamed of.
No doubt you're aware that the commercial fishing season is ramping up here, but also just around the corner lurks a very lucrative and perhaps ripe to expand tourist season in Bristol Bay. There's the sport fishing, the bear viewing, rafting, hunting, and sightseeing. And right now there's a huge bear hunt happening up and down the Alaska Peninsula, perhaps the most famous of its kind in the world. Often the thousands who stream into the region are quickly whisked off to the backcountry, and we don't see much of them. Well, we figured it was a good time to take a brief look at tourism in our area, a little snapshot of what's happening and what some in the biz have to say about it. The mega tourist operation, now known as Katmai Land, was founded in 1950 by Ray Peterson. His son Sonny Peterson took over decades ago and has kept the outfit thriving. Here's Sonny describing the magnitude of the summer business.
As most people out in Bristol Bay know, Brooks River is probably the most famous and the most popular place that people go bear viewing. You know, it has the falls and, of course, backs up the salmon, and it's got a platform and the park service is there and all of that. So it's world famous. Probably more people go bear viewing there than, I bet, any place in the world. And, you know, we probably take 5,000 or 6,000 people in and out of there, besides just lodge guests and campers and bear viewer every year. Sometimes we'll move, over 100 people in and out each day with our air taxi, which is Katmai Air, which we also operate. And then up at Kulik and Grosvenor, our other lodges, we are primarily sport fishing. And, we take somewhere just less than 1,000 people a year through both of those operations, mostly sport fishing. And, we operate 7 airplanes, and they're flying all over Southwest Alaska.
Fishing in the Katmai country, you don't waste any time at all. After you've tried the fishing at one spot, you climb into a safe, powerful, twin-engined, 8-passenger Cessna Bushmaster to fly in a matter of minutes to the next spot.
One of the most well-known tourism models for Bristol Bay is the high-end sport fishing lodges. Some are nearby the hubs, but many lodges are tucked away in remote, spectacular spots. Clients pay about $8,000 per person per week. Over the course of 6 fishing days, the lodge flies clients to and from various world-class hotspots. The package gives maximum exposure and leaves nothing to want. Nancy Morris Lyon lives in King Salmon and is the managing partner at one such lodge called the Alaska Sportsman's Bear Trail Lodge. Her business is tied to the health of the economy, and during the recession, times were tight. but she says it's been getting steadily better.
I think that you can definitely see there's been a turnaround in the United States, the lower 48, I guess I should say specifically, because we all know what's happening here in Alaska. But definitely in the lower 48, you can tell people's pocketbooks are loosening up a bit again. I've gotten way, way more corporate travel than I have in the past, and my phone is still ringing very steadily. So it's very encouraging. My best estimate's going to be up probably 10 to 15% from last year. So it is a significant number when you look at it, because your profits when you run an operation this large don't start even until you've hit probably at least a 70% full number, and then you can start looking at profits. So now we're talking like we might actually see profits instead of breaking even like we have for the last several years. So that'll be very good, and it's encouraging.
If you've ever been at the Dillingham or King Salmon airports on a summer weekend, you probably have a sense how big a deal this area is worldwide for angling. The sport fishermen, they're the ones who look like they just had the best week of their life, are standing in line with white boxes full of take-home salmon, and about half of whom insist on wearing some part of their river wading gear home on the plane, easily distinguished from the commercial fishing influx with its extra tufts, Grundens hoodies, and unkempt facial hair.
There's probably about three big draws here, and it's going to start in June and July with the Nishigat Kings and the Naknek Kings.
King salmon, prize of them all, may be taken within a few flying minutes from Brooks Camp and run from 10 to 50 pounds.
Those are big draws because they're big fish and people aren't used to seeing fish that big. Then it moves right into the bears. The bears are going to be popular from July through September, and the experience of fishing in streams where they're going to see bears, probably closer than they'd like because they don't understand totally what that means when they're fishing with bears. And then the way the season always ends is with the big rainbows, which of course the Naknek is just unparalleled for, and we also have the Kwejek that supplements it very nicely as well.
Here comes the lure again. And the trout. Wham! And this time he hangs on. Boy, look at those acrobatics. Yes, sir. Do you know of any fish more beautiful than a Katmai rainbow trout?
It's a pretty incredible opportunity to offer people experiences in three different ways that they can't get anywhere else in the world.
And many of these lodges are top-notch.
Neat log and tent cabins, spring mattress beds, gas heaters for cool nights, shower facilities.
Imagine you're fishing one of the best trout rivers in the world, and the afternoon is turning to evening, and you hear that beaver overhead coming to take you back to the lodge. You might think some of these clients would say they'd prefer to stay on the river and fish till last light, hit them again at dawn. But Morris Lyons says in her slice of this industry, that's usually not the case.
It only happens once or twice every few years. It's not often. Most of them like to come back. We've got two chefs here that prepare meals that they look forward to coming back to the lodge for. We've got a hot tub. We have a masseuse. We have, you know, the things that make them feel young again come the next morning.
After a hearty breakfast, those who like to fish from a boat may board a cruiser, move out into the lake to fish the river mouths and bays.
Another outfit on the east side continues to explore a little bit different model. The King Salmon Lodge offers fine dining and nightly rates, attracting visitors who come to Bristol Bay for a variety of activities, not just die-hard sport fishing. Matt Norman and his wife Sandra run things, but we bumped into owner Bruce Burton this week. Burton tells us he has a new idea to help bring more people into the bay this summer.
Trying to do a bluegrass show this fall. I've got a bunch of bluegrass musicians from Nashville coming up in the end of August. The focus really is to bring guests to the lodge and have them take some lessons and hang out with some, you know, professional recording artists and enjoy the bear viewing and some fishing and just the camaraderie of a different environment from your typical bluegrass festival. So,
over the past few years, King Salmon Lodge has been tweaking its model as a destination for visitors who want to enjoy the spectrum of Bristol Bay's to-dos, whether for a few days or a whole week. KSL opens earlier in the season than most and closes later. It's attracting groups, conferences, and corporate retreats. Last fall, scoring the Alaska Council of School Administrators Fall Conference in late September. The gourmet restaurant and cocktail lounge are open to the public. a top-notch chef comes up every summer and offers cooking classes. Some guests travel all the way to King Salmon, Alaska just for that. Other guests ask for a day or two of guided fishing or for guided photography trips or to view bears in Katmai and even spend time mingling around the commercial fishing activity in Naknek. Burton says people everywhere else dream of coming here. It's just a matter of finding new and improved ways to cater to them.
Alaska's done a wonderful job, I think, of kind of portraying itself as a bucket list place for people, you know. So there's a lot of people in the world, and there's plenty of business for everyone.
For those who can spare a few minutes from fishing, there is water skiing and swimming on Naknek Lake. Long hours of warm summer sunlight are good for a spin on the lake.
That's some of what's happening on the east side of Bristol Bay. What about on the west side, where the king and coho fishing is unrivaled? We asked Jerry Ball of Freshwater Adventures to tell us a little bit about his business.
Fishing is primarily what I am involved with. Sport fishing, the Nooshigak River, the king salmon. Yeah, one of the only contributaries that's still open to sport fishing is the Nooshigak River. And the fishing's been excellent here of recent.
It's no trick tying into a package of fighting dynamite, for this is the most prolific salmon spawning area in the world. Sockeyes in vast numbers and lakes and streams in turn make life easy for several other species of fighting game fish. Giant pugnacious rainbow trout that rush to hit at fly and lure. Graceful grayling and Dolly Varden. Mackinaw and lake trout. Giant northern pike. For many of these game fish feed on salmon eggs and salmon fingerlings. Thus nourished, grow fat and sassy.
Once people start coming in here, they continue to come back. I'd say 85% of my business is return people year after year after year. And we're into rafting. We take people out rafting the rivers and the Togiak National Wildlife Refuge and the Wood Tikchik system and kayaking, all the outdoor activities, hiking, berry picking, bear viewing. Bear viewing's big, you know, could be a bigger tourism attraction here, especially out towards Cape Constantine and in that area, in the wild, not just there at the Brooks Falls eating salmon, catching them.
No question, there's less tourism activity on the west side of Bristol Bay, but Ball says he thinks there's room to expand the industry, especially with all of the open country to the north and to the west. But he's got his eye on one of those world-famous, almost impossible-to-get-to blue water destinations here in the region.
I personally would love to get involved in the Walrus Island bird viewing, walrus watching, you know, whales in general out there. It's phenomenal. And nothing's, you know, there's a young fella running people out from Togiak. But, yeah, it's a lot of opportunity here for tourism and up in the lake system. Wood Tikchik Lake system. Yeah, beautiful, beautiful country. Yeah, most of the people here in Bristol Bay hardly know, you know, what they really have here for opportunities.
To wrap up this portion of our program, here's just a few numbers. Bristol Bay drives about $100 million in fishing and tourism activity each year. Katmai National Park sees 15 to 20,000 unique visitors every year, most of whom come through King Salmon, Homer, Kodiak, and Anchorage. Sport fishing is the primary visitor use there, followed by bear viewing. The Togiak Refuge hosts about 4,000 visitors from outside the area. About half are guided, half are unguided, as they fish, hunt, and raft in the refuge. In 2014, there were 89,000 recorded angler days on Bristol Bay water bodies that require guide logbooks. The Nooshigak River and the Naknek River see the most traffic. The Lake and Peninsula Borough captures about $250,000 in bed taxes and guide use fees each year. It estimates if it created a 6% tourism tax for all of the estimated 75,000 visitors per year, it might collect more like $2 to $3 million per year. There are roughly 80 fishing lodges located in Bristol Bay. Oh, and about 100% of the people we talk to in the industry say they enjoy what they do.
Yeah, just having fun. If it isn't fun, we don't want to do it. It's got to be enjoyable. And, you know, you put together programs and people come. Yeah, it's beautiful, beautiful. Bristol Bay is just a beautiful area of Alaska, the best, by my opinion.
This is Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG. We're looking at tourism in the Bay this week, much of which gets fast and furiously underway next month. But right now, a pretty significant number of hunters are all over the peninsula in search of legendary brown bear. Dave Crowley is Fish and Game's area wildlife biologist for the Alaska Peninsula.
Well, it's an every other year hunt on the peninsula, and that's to keep harvest down to a level that we think is sustainable. We have, upwards of 600-700 bear hunters that go out on the Alaska Peninsula this time of year, and roughly 40% are successful in getting a bear.
The Alaska Peninsula brown bear hunt jockeys with Kodiak for number one spot with biggest trophy bear, but in terms of number of hunters and economic impact, it seems to be unrivaled.
Most hunters are hiring guides, and it's very spendy. $15,000 to $20,000 to hire a guide. Most bear hunters are spending $20,000 or more to hunt out here. And I kind of tallied it up this year just to get an idea of what that value is economically. And it's about $10 million for most of the Alaska Peninsula that bear hunters are spending. So pretty substantial.
We'll introduce you to one of those out-of-state bear hunters in a moment. First, we called around this week to some who are hosting the hunting activity for updates on how things are going. Jeremy and Michelle Davis run Canoe Bay Outfitters out of Port Allsworth, guiding bear hunters much further south on the peninsula. Jeremy is in the field this week, and his clients have so far all been successful, which is good news after the sluggish fall hunt. Michelle was in Port Allsworth and told me why they enjoy this line of work.
The thing we tell our clients is, we're exploring our backyard, so when they come in and get to see what we get to enjoy on a daily basis, the extreme wilderness and untouched beauty. Along with that, you get all the chaos of weather and things that are out of control, which makes it interesting and exciting. But we love where we live. We're both born and raised here, and getting to show people that part of our world is just really fun for us.
Often quiet, Cold Bay is one of the hubs for peninsula bear hunting. Connie Newton runs the Barefoot Inn in Cold Bay and says she might have some 20 hunters stay with her this month. Newton says this is an important economic boost and adds that the hunters and guides have proven to be pretty good company over the years, too.
Most of the guides, they've been great, and we just cater to them, you know, because we're about the only grocery store and hotel besides a couple of lodges in town, along with a bar, which really helps. Also, the different people we've met, the actual clients that are coming through have been very interesting, very nice, and we've seen return clientele come through. They might have not gotten a bear the last time they were out, or they're just returning with a son or, son-in-law or a daughter, and you meet them from all over the country.
We sent KDLG's Hannah Colton to catch up with some of the activity that was funneling through the King Salmon Hub this week. She brought back this report.
On the bank of the Naknek River in King Salmon is Float Plane Row, where a hunter just flew in from the field. He's got a hide laid out on the gravel alongside a bloody bear skull. He's waiting for Dave Crowley and Chris Peterson. They're wildlife biologists from the local Fish and Game office, and they set up shop on the tailgate of their pickup truck.
This is a caliper and a ruler. I am measuring the length and the width of the skull. You add that together and you get skull size.
When hunters, like this guy from Anchorage, get back with their trophies, this is one of the first boxes they have to check. They have to get Fish and Game to seal the skull and the hide. It's a quick inspection to take some samples.
I'm just taking a hair sample for DNA.
And to make sure the hunter has crossed his T's and dotted his I's.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Congratulations. Great job.
Yep. Back in town, I stop in at the King Salmon Airport. Penn Air agent Lisa Davis tells me she's been checking bear hides for successful hunters all week. She had 6 yesterday, packed up in plastic bags or totes.
We have a lot of hunters that come in with bears, and you generally know because they do stink. Even if they're carefully prepared, when they come in, they smell very bad.
By now, she's used to the smell, but she says getting these on the plane doesn't always go smoothly.
Oh, yeah. We had a passenger come in last night whose baggage was overweight for his bear hide, and he had to lose 20 pounds, so he suggested that he take it outside, cut off the feet so that it would be underweight so that he could get it on the plane last night. We went ahead and let him ship it as cargo so that he did not have to do that.
The noon flight has been canceled, as happens often and unexpectedly at the King Salman Airport. And it's left one hunter sitting in the lobby, waiting for the next flight out.
My name's Wayne Hott. I'm a retired Air Force dentist. I live in Wichita, Kansas.
Wayne is a trim 68-year-old. He wears a crisp wool button-up and clean matching camos, and he's fiddling with his smartphone.
I think one of my family just replied back to the text with the picture of the bear.
Wayne Hott has been waiting years for this moment, when he gets to report that he's taken a brown bear. He says he's hunted lots of big game, but brown bears have been a touchy subject since he had three unsuccessful trips in Southeast Alaska over a decade ago.
And I did other things to try and forget about the brown bear, but obviously I couldn't forget about it completely.
According to rates listed on the AAA Alaskan Outfitters website, Wayne shelled out more than $24,000 for a 15-day guided trip on the Alaska Peninsula. His first week in the field, the weather was iffy. A few good hunting days and a couple rainy ones spent in the tent. Then his luck turned.
Must have been Monday. Yeah, Monday was day eight of my hunt.
Wayne and his guide were in a pop-up blind when they spotted a sow with two cubs on the side of the mountain.
And all of a sudden, there was this lot bigger bear above him and came down toward him. And the two bears were just nose-to-nose like a couple of dogs posturing at each other. And this was like a mile off, but we could see them.
Finally, the bigger bear left the others. It started moving down the mountain toward a grassy spot in the valley that looked promising.
We grabbed our packs and took off at 4 o'clock and shot the bear at 4:45. And we were back in camp, I think, either 7:30 or 8 o'clock with the bear skinned.
Leaving the rest of the carcass in the field for scavengers to find, Wayne was happy to get out of there. He'd had about enough of the rain and cramped tent. His 9-foot bear hide will continue its journey. It'll be cleaned, salted, and then FedExed back to Kansas, where Wayne's favorite taxidermist is on call. Eventually, the bear will be mounted with the rest of the Hott family collection. Wayne wants his bear on a grassy base in a natural position, so not fierce or growling, but he says with the teeth visible. He is a retired dentist, after all.
The thing that's so remarkable about the bear, though, is that I like the most in my wife, and it's important because she's always asking me where we're going to put the next one. She'll love this because it's beautiful. The legs are all from like the elbow down to its foot is dark brown, and then it's just varying shades of brown, light brown, blonde, and tan. Big wide head. It's a beautiful, beautiful specimen.
Besides the looks, what Wayne loves about this bear is the fact that he shot it with ammunition he made himself. He says this is the fourth dangerous game he's taken with his own hand-loaded ammunition.
I can check the speed of the bullet so I know what its trajectory is and all that kind of stuff. It's just really getting into the weeds with that hobby, but that trips my trigger and I like it. I'm retired, so I've got the time to do it.
So it's like really the science, like almost the physics of it that you like.
It's the satisfaction of taking the components that go together to make a rifle cartridge and making it work, having it shoot accurately, and then having it perform well when it better perform well, you know. If you're trying to take a Cape Buffalo or a leopard or a brown bear, ammunition better work. Better work.
According to the regulations for this spring hunt, when you take a brown bear, that's it. You can't get another one for 4 years. But that doesn't bother Wayne Hott a bit. He did what he came to do. Reporting in King Salmon, I'm Hannah Colton.
Many of you have great stories of your own trips and adventures in our backyard, and we'd like to air those here. We have two to share this week, but not enough time for both. a great recounting of a hiking and pack rafting adventure some Lake and Penn teachers undertook last summer, will have to wait. We'll leave you with this story from a good friend of this program. She has her own title, but we'll call it Time and Tides Wait for No Hindman.
Hi, this is Kathy Hindman, and I am here to relate a story of an adventure I had with my daughter. My story is entitled Kathy and Rachel's Excellent Adventure. What a fantastic day! Rachel and I scouted the bay and determined it was just the right day to paddle to Grassy Island. Little wind, barely any waves, just the twinkling of sun off the ripples. Within 20 minutes, we had the car gassed up, the kayaks on top of the car, life jackets, snacks, and drinks inside, and down the road, stopping only once for a quick foray into a yard sale. Big score there, too. A huge ratchet strap, a Scrabble set, canning jars and lids. And then to the harbor to carefully file a float plan with the ever-so-excellent and efficient Ginny Mae Bobbitt, assistant harbor master. The sky was blue with floating, puffy clouds. The wind blew just gently down the river and out the bay. The tide was right at the top of full, slack tide. Off we paddled, aiming toward the low point of land about a mile across the confluence of the Wood and the Noshagak. And paddled. Perhaps the tide had turned just a bit. But closer and closer we came. A huge flight of birds wheeled up from the far shore suddenly and flew over us. They seemed to be spooking a lot sooner than the gulls spooked when I gathered eggs a few years ago. I wondered if they were spooking due to our approach. Then I saw rapid splashing, really wild, for just a little bit. Then calm waters again close to shore where the birds had left. Then belugas, lots of belugas feeding along the shore, rising in subtle shining white humps to blow and breathe, horse-like. Rachel and I decided that we could either paddle around Grassy Island or just stay there and watch belugas, which seemed the better idea. So gently we paddled toward the shore, Rachel teasing me about being in the salmon-colored kayak. Then, oh my goodness, water splashing everywhere under my boat. A gaping hole in the gray-brown muddy water. A swishing, swirling water hole as big as my boat. And I was in the 16-footer. You know those dreams where you need to scream but can't? Not my problem. Shriek after shriek, flailing with the paddle. Then the water quiet once again. To shore, shuddering. And the belugas again feeding quietly behind us. We ate, too, devouring snacks, watching the gentle rising and falling of white heads in the water. We decided that really, around the island could definitely wait. But we better get off the mud bar. We decided that about 5 minutes later than we should have. Boy, the tide goes out fast. Splashing, shoving, jerking of boat, pushing of paddles in deep mud, and snap! A broken paddle broken halfway off down the blade. Sigh. Eventually floating free, and then did we ever paddle, not wanting to meet the belugas. Across the bay like lightning, probably less than half the time it took us to get there, with wind and water totally in our favor, not to mention the spurt of adrenaline. Ginny thinks I ran over a salmon shark. Those things can get enormous. I can't say what I really saw, but the swishing water sure seemed sharky, and I'm pretty glad the water was opaque. There's probably lots of things that I don't want to see swimming around out there. Next week, with a higher tide and a rudder on the yellow kayak, we'll try again.
Kathy Hindman with a tale of adventure there. Thanks very much for that. If you'd like to share your own, drop us a line at news@kdlg.org and let us know.
To experience these same never-to-be-forgotten thrills of the fabulous Katmai country, contact your local airline or travel agent, or write Northern Consolidated Airlines at Anchorage, Alaska. They'll be happy to write your ticket for adventure in the land of the midnight sun.
That's it for this week's show. You can find this and past episodes of Bristol Bay and Beyond at our website, kdlg.org. I'm Dave Benninger. My thanks to Hannah Colton and Molly Dishner. Keep in touch with feedback and ideas, and we'll see you back here next Friday.